What's happening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Top Bins Talk. I am your host, Marcin, here with my co-host, Tim. Say what's up, Tim.
Hey, everybody. Pleasure to be home again.
Yeah, here we are on episode number 9 so far of Top Bins Talk, and this is a new version of Top Bins Talk where we, me and Tim, are not with each other. Usually we do our episodes together, and we literally sit within 3 inches of each other. Either in my living room or Tim's living room, but here we're doing a virtual cast. So Tim's at his house and I'm in my house for obvious reasons with quarantine. We both live in New Jersey, so we're both a little bit locked up right now, but we're still going to push out content a little bit more consistently moving forward for you guys. So we're definitely excited to be back doing podcasts with you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. And, distant, but, being locked up really just, it's helping me hone my baking skills, man. I panic made 3 loaves of banana bread the other day. And that's not footy related at all. That's just something everybody should know is that, you know, if your bananas are going bad, you know, you could always just panic and just make an absurd amount of banana bread.
Yeah, so if anybody needs a baking recipe, Tim is the guy to definitely get you that. Some weird recipes. Every single day on Instagram, he posts different food that he makes in terms of bread, banana bread. He focuses a lot on bread, is what I'm trying to say. And then on the flip side of it, I'm over here losing my hair. And on the flip side of that, I'm over here losing my mind because I haven't worked out in like 6 weeks. I'm using gallons of water and a backpack to get some makeshift workouts in. But we digress. We've been on this tangent already to start for 2 minutes. Let's get back on topic. And we are here to talk about football, about Serie A. We have some world football news. We're going to start off, like usual, for new listeners of the podcast, because I'm sure we'll get some new guys in here with the pandemic trying to do something different. Mostly we focus on Serie A news. And then obviously we try to do incorporate other leagues around the world into our podcast. So Tim, let's start off with some news from Serie A, which would be about Lazio's president, Lotito, asking and like being very adamant and persistent about starting training off again for the players. So how do you feel about that kind of like kicking off the podcast today?
Well, I mean, you know, it's very clear that anything Lazio does is wrong. And that's not just because I'm a Romanisti. That's just, you know, it's common sense. I think it's a odd reaction considering the state of Italy specifically. Italy is still in probably one of its hardest historical periods ever. Even, you know, obviously outside of football, you know, prayers always to them and what they're going through right now. I think it's entirely insensitive to be pushing the envelope to reopen your sporting facility when there are still hospital facilities and provider facilities that are having a hard time dealing with what's going on in the world. So I think it's, you know, I understand different countries, different standards, different communities, but specifically for Italy, man, I mean, talk about not reading the room on this one, right?
Right. So for anybody that doesn't know, Lotito was the only president. There was recently a meeting between all the presidents of all 20 Serie A teams in terms of what they thought was going to be the game plan moving forward. He was the only president or higher up of any club that was pushing for training. So every other team, whether it was Milan, Merida, Juve, Chievo, whichever other club in Serie A you want to talk about, they all rejected the idea of starting off training anytime soon. And that meeting took place, I believe, a week or 10 days ago or something like that. Right now, the Serie A is planning to tentatively return to training. I believe what I saw was around May 4th, May 5th. Obviously, that's tentative, depending on if anything happens over the next few weeks. And then I saw the game plan was to restart matches in terms of Serie A matches at the end of May, beginning of June. So I saw like May 27th to June 4th was like the tentative date to reopen Serie A. And honestly, I still think that's a little bit early. I think most of the most hardest hit countries in terms of like the United States, obviously Italy, which was the first one that was really hit hard. And Spain, I think that's still a very like you're still really pushing the envelope with those dates. I don't know if in the next 4 weeks, 5 weeks, things are going to change so drastically that you're going to feel safe and you're going to feel secure in terms of having football. I understand that the players are going to be isolated and away from fans because obviously all these matches and things are going to be happening behind closed doors. But you're still risking the health of the players. You're still having them travel around different regions of the country. And I think right now, with especially with a lot of players like in other countries and staying with their families for obvious reasons, I just don't know how realistic or how likely it is that we're going to be seeing football at the end of May or even at the beginning of June, to be super honest. Do you think that's a reasonable time frame, or do you think it's going to take longer than that to resume football activities?
Yeah, I mean, look, I don't mean to be so ominous, and I don't mean to sound so harsh, but you know, the reality is that you have families in Italy that are not going to be able to have funerals right now for their loved ones, and you anticipate that in a couple of weeks, people are going to prioritize going to a football match. Over having proceedings for loved ones is insanity in my perspective. Syria is, really needs, again, I use the phrase read the room because it's the lightest way that you could put it. Syria really needs to assess, what the country really needs right now. And what the country doesn't really need right now half done reopening of the league, because realistically, healthcare at that point, you're looking at, like you said, a concern where you're either not going to have people at those games and you're going to play behind closed doors, which isn't going to do anybody any good because, you, me, anybody that's listening to this right now is well aware that, football is nothing without the fans. And if you're going to have the games behind closed doors, there's going to be, it's just not going to help any. So I really think that Serie A really needs to take a good look at what's going on in their own country right now in Italy and move from there and not make it about, financial interests elsewhere.
Right. So obviously with Italy still having those tentative dates, there are other leagues that have done obviously their own thing. Each country is different, like Tim mentioned. So when it comes time to kind of talk about Italy reopening, we'll rehash that at that point. But one country that has resumed training, or at least some teams in the country have resumed training, and that's in the Bundesliga. So most notably, Bayern Munich reopened training for their players. So all their players were brought back, I believe, 2 weeks ago. They did a two-week quarantine in their homes before they were allowed at the training grounds. There was a interview that Robert Lewandowski did for a Polish news show, essentially. And he kind of went over briefly, not in huge detail, but he kind of went over some things that the club was doing in terms of how they were training. So the way that Bayern is conducting training right now is it's still social distance training. So players are coming in four or five at a time in terms of set hours. So let's say you have training from 1 to 3 o'clock. You have only four or five players are at the facilities at that time. You're never in the same room or in contact with those players. And you're doing your training outdoor. And if you're doing your trainings outdoors, you're still maintaining that 6 foot difference. So even if you're playing one twos with somebody, you're obviously at a distance and doing all that stuff. Bayern also aren't allowing the players to like shower and bathe at the facility. So obviously they have to go home and do that. And they're being tested on their way in and out of the facilities. So I think what Bayern are doing in terms of obviously their training, I think is the right way to go about bringing back players in terms of their training. Obviously they're being tested, they're still kept at a distance. I think obviously they're still doing ball work, and all the players have different times that they're allowed at the facilities, which I think is the right way to go about it. Because obviously, like you and me, we're both at this point we're 5 weeks at home, so we're starting to get a little stir crazy. We're going on walks and we're trying to do our thing in terms of our own self, but obviously these players also are professional athletes, so they have a different regimen and a different level of activity that they need to kind of keep their bodies in shape for whenever the season's going to be restarted or whenever that obviously happens. So I think it's interesting that the Bundesliga has already started, or some teams in the Bundesliga have already started in terms of their training. I like how Bayern are doing it. I think that if anybody's going to return to training, I think they should follow how Bayern are doing their model in case of just making sure everybody's safe and nobody has any issues at the clubs. Because obviously in Serie A, we had players contracted with the coronavirus. You had, like, most notably, obviously, Dybala, Rugani and Matuidi from Juve had it. So obviously you don't want anybody getting re-sick or anything along those lines. So I think the way that Bayern are doing it is the proper way to go about it. How do you feel about them, like, doing this training session and them even doing training in general?
I think them doing their training is a definitive statement that Bundesliga is going to attempt to finish their season. You know, we'll approach on that a little bit later with a couple of different leagues, looking at a couple of different avenues. But, you know, that's a definitive statement by that league saying, look, you're going to want to keep your guys in shape here. Not, you know, because they have so many of those players have their own home gyms. They have these beautiful homes, the swimming pool. They're getting their fitness in. Is it the same fitness level, to your point, as the fitness that they would experience at a team practice? No, not at all. You know, but it is a definitive statement from the Bundesliga at that rate. And, you know, I just don't agree with it. I think that, you know, given the level that they play at, given the level that they run at, you know, Kevin De Bruyne was actually quoted recently in an interview saying, you know, if you ask us to come back and resume games within weeks of this scenario, you're just going to have people with injuries all over the place. Nobody's going to be physically ready for the toll it takes on your body to play a game at that level. You know, I jokingly say it's when, you know, when a player doesn't train very hard for a long time, you end up getting it where, you know, the mind wants to go one way and the body goes the other way. And guess what? The body wins. So, you know, you're going to get a lot of guys in a very dangerous situation there. So I don't agree with it. I think, again, it's insensitive. This is not, you know, what we're going through right now as a society is not something to be taken lightly. And I think, you know, Bundesliga might be, you know, might be held a little guilty right now, just the same way as Lazio are of not reading the room, like I said before. I'm all for people training. I'm all for people staying in shape. I'm not for, you know, trying to tiptoe around what you should or shouldn't be doing. You know?
Yeah. To your point, there were a couple articles that came out that the fans of the Bundesliga, a lot of like ultras groups were not very happy about the timeline that the Bundesliga kind of set. Cause I believe the Bundesliga said they wanted to start playing games by the first week of May. And the fans were very quick to like slam the bosses of the Bundesliga and say that it's a quote from an article I read that it's a mockery to the rest of society. Kind of to your point, like read the room, like look what's going on pretty much everywhere in the world. And like, why are you like pushing it for the Bundesliga? And there are obviously even as far as captains of some Bundesliga sides, like the captain of Paderborn, like really chewed into the German FA bosses and was like, look, this is ridiculous that you're even considering restarting the season at this point, because this is like not what we should be doing right now. We should be obviously taking care of like the sick and making sure that this doesn't continue spreading everywhere else that it is. So I feel like exactly to your point, like the players can get fitness. I mean, yeah, they may have to sacrifice some fitness if they stay at home and not train with clubs. But I think the German FA is definitely getting some slack, not only from fans, but also from captains and players in the Bundesliga that are like, hey, this timeline, it doesn't really make sense. But I mean, at that point, like as a player, what can you do? You're under contract with the team. You kind of have, like, if the team recalls you to start training, like you have to listen to your club or you're in breach of contract, and there's a lot more issues. So I think it's a little selfish with what the Bundesliga FAs are doing. I mean, at this point, it's, yeah, like they want to kick off games because they want to continue making money and not go into financial issues. But at the end of the day, I think the player's health and well-being and them being with their families is a little bit more of a priority right now than playing some behind closed door matches for a few months, you know?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, the Bundesliga specifically has a lot more of, you know, of fan ownership and a lot more of fan input. So true. I would be really curious. I think they're going to be out of the top five leagues. They're going to be the biggest fluctuation because, you know, obviously Premier League, they want to, you know, they're looking at it. How can we finish this out? You know, Premier League, at least stateside, is a behemoth as far as financials are concerned with their contract with, you know, NBCSN and several other facets, they're going to want to finish this, and they're going to want to finish the season out, you know, regardless of what you hear otherwise. And, you know, I think Bundesliga kind of treads almost the other way, where it's so heavily, you know, fan oriented that if there's a giant uproar among the fan base and amongst the ultras, like you were saying, that might genuinely influence, you know, that's going to do one of two things. It's either going to genuinely influence what's going on in Bundesliga, or it's going to show that times are changing in Bundesliga and, you know, fan input isn't as valued, and that might also reflect poorly. So they're going to be, Bundesliga is going to be the one that I'm very interested in seeing how they go.
Yeah, especially with the, I mean, that, like I said, that's the German FA's boss side that I kind of mentioned before. Mrs. Angela Merkel, the Chancellor of Germany, did say and state that public gatherings of more than two people at a venue in the same space were actually prohibited until August. So that actually may have thrown the Bundesliga's plans of restarting games definitely up for a different idea at this point, just because you have to think about that. You have two full squads plus any medical personnel and even some people to like film the game and broadcast. That's definitely more than two people. So I'm very curious to see how the Bundesliga kind of tries to bypass Angela Merkel's newest announcement in terms of what Germany is doing as a country to kind of try to prevent all this stuff from happening. So it's obviously an interesting dynamic what's going on in Germany. Obviously, some teams are trying to bring in training and kind of continue this, like Bayern. And I think the FA bosses, like, to your point, are very out of the loop in terms of what's going on the world stage. And I think they're very focused on dollar figures, euro figures, whatever you want to call it at this point. So it will be definitely interesting to kind of keep an eye on, because like I said, their tentative date was at the beginning of May. I think May 4th was the date that they actually wanted to start matches again, which is in what, 2.5-3 weeks, less than that. So we're obviously going to keep an eye on that, and that might be a topic that we kind of revisit in a couple weeks and see if it would actually even happen, or if it's, or if it was pushed back again, and what else. But obviously this kind of brings us into another league that actually did something obviously during this whole pandemic, and that was Belgium. So for those that don't know, Belgium actually announced that, announced who their champions were. They gave the title to Bruges. So Bruges are the champions of Belgium. But obviously that kind of comes with a little bit of an issue, because UEFA wasn't really too thrilled, because Belgium never really kind of talked to them about this whole situation, never really got their input on it. And they just kind of awarded the title and the season as is to the table. And UEFA obviously wasn't too thrilled about that. So there's some issues going on there. But Tim, how are your feelings on in terms of what Bruges are doing? Do you think it's the right move in terms of just naming the champion and then ending the season and then just restarting the next year, like the 2021 season? Or, you know, like, or do you think they were a little bit... Go ahead, you're good.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. I was going to say, in the same light that I'm criticizing all these other clubs and leagues for not reading the room, you know, I got to say, you know, they might have been held the other way here, where acting before, you know, getting everybody else on the same page has, at least in my opinion, it's thrown European football into turmoil at this point. I'm not trying to pin the Belgian league for anything football world-related problems, but consider this for a fact, is that, yes, you made a definitive choice, but, you know, you're part of UEFA, you're participating regularly in Champions League, Europa League games, and for you to not consider what the other leagues and countries are doing, or at least try to get them on the same page as you before acting, has actually complicated things, right? Because let's say, Belgian league ends right now. They take their extended period for, recovering. Obviously, not only as players, but as a country, you're recovering, and then you have your summer period off. But then you look at, you know, maybe Bundesliga, Serie A do resume their seasons, and they try to pack in all these fixtures, and it runs into the summer. You're looking at complications of, well, you know, UEFA might have their hands tied and say, well, we can't have these playoff rounds for, you know, the Champions League or the Europa League ties during, you know, before the season starts, the way that, for certain leagues, and we might find it where, you know, Belgium has kind of put them in a difficult spot. You know, there's also the facet, and we keep repeating the financial piece to it. Clubs, FAs, countries want to make money off of football, so they want to get the game back going. But in all actuality, you know, there are some unintended consequences of ending your league early, which are that of the clubs that get relegated. You know, if you're a club and you're a mid to lower level club in a top flight division, you avoiding relegation could really save your club as a whole. You going down could really cost you coming back up for a couple of years. So, you know, do I think they made the right decision? I don't live in Belgium. I couldn't really tell you. However, the repercussions that are felt across the football world, and again, not because that they were being cautious, but because they didn't coincide with the other leagues and the other FAs before making their decision, I think they put everybody in a tough spot.
True, and I agree with you on that aspect. The aspect of this whole situation with Belgium that I do agree is how they went about it in terms of just ending the table and just crowning the champions and just kind of labeling the table as is. In my honest opinion, like it's not just because Juve are in first place. This has nothing to do with that. But if you end the seasons now in terms of all leagues across the board, right, and you just name the tables as is, so then you're giving the players the next essentially 3+ months off for their usual summer break. So then you'd have May, June, and then like mid-July is usually when your training camps start off. So you'd have about 2.5, almost 3 months off for all the players. You'd have 3 months where the players don't have to worry about training, about coming back, playing matches behind closed doors. You wouldn't risk anybody traveling around the country for matches or anything like that. So the risk will be minimalized for the players. They get to spend more time with their families for a couple months, and the tables are as is. And then you just start off the next season in terms of the 2021 season, like normally as planned. So kind of to your point, you're not messing with timelines. You're not messing with schedules for seasons. You're not messing with anything at all. It's just that this was essentially a shortened season to however many rounds you finished with. It was 20, I think it was 26 rounds in the Serie A, so 2/3 of the season passed. And then all the other leagues kind of follow suit with that. So in terms of, yes, maybe they jumped the gun in terms of how they went about it, in terms of just claiming the title, naming Bruges as the champions, and not really speaking to UEFA about it. But I think that what they ultimately did is I think that would make the most sense for me, at least for all the leagues, whether that's EPL, Bundesliga, all the leagues around the world. I think if they just ended now, give your players 2-3 months to recover. You give the world, in terms of the players' families and all that kind of stuff, you give the world a couple months to couple months to recover before you start off with the football again. And then you just go into a training camp, and then you do your usual thing and do the schedules for the 2021 season and just start from there. Obviously, the only issue that is, what do you do with the Champions League? Which I don't know. I don't have an answer for that right now. I haven't really given that part of it too much thought. But I think in terms of at least the league season, I think that's the proper way to go about it and kind of make it make sense in terms of the next year, especially with the Euros being in next summer now, since they got pushed back to 2021. So there's a lot of stuff that's going to be bunched into the calendar for the next year and a half. So why are you just going to make it worse and try to push essentially all the league seasons an extra 2-3 months into the future? That's my take on it, obviously.
Right. I mean, look, and I want to be clear, my gripe with the situation is not that they decided to call the season early. My gripe with the situation is that they acted independently and thus complicated, the relationships with the several other leagues and, you know, and the financial implications of that. So that's really my plight with them is that they acted that way independently. I understand you're your own FA. However, you're coinciding with an organization, and you should always act that way. Speaking of UCL though, financial fair play implications go hand in hand with UCL all the time. That's why, you know, it's really gone from your club playing for a trophy to your club playing for, you know, a top four spot in most leagues. So, you know, that's kind of the next subject that we're on to here is, you know, what's it looking like? What should we see going forward, financial fair play wise? So, you know, I know you have a specific opinion on this one. So So I'll let you take the reins on this.
Sure. So yeah, me and Tim differ a little bit in terms of this opinion on financial fair play. I think what I've read into is what's going to happen is that financial fair play is going to be a little bit more relaxed for the next transfer window and or for the next foreseeable future. Just because you have obviously a couple issues. You have teams losing hundreds upon millions of euros of revenue. I think obviously the transfer fees for players are going to be a lot lower because nobody's going to have that same amount of money to spend. So the money isn't going to be really moving around clubs as much as it usually would in a window. I don't think you're going to be seeing too many 100 million euro signings going on over the next window or two, whenever that obviously window happens. So I think that's going to be really interesting of what happens. I think that financial fair play is obviously going to be a big part of that, because I think with them kind of easing up on the regulations and the rules for this tough situation, I think it's going to be a good thing for all the clubs, because the clubs aren't going to be as in dire need of scrambling for money and just trying to sell players for the sake of players. So I think the competition in within squads and within leagues is still going to be remained at a high level, because you're not going to have every single team scrambling to make funds to meet financial fair play, which obviously is going to maintain a high level of competition. But obviously you're not going to be seeing those transfers, like those large transfers, happening anyway, because all the clubs are going to be trying to hold on and earn as much money back from what they lost over this period as possible. So I think it's the right call if UEFA make that official. Like I said, what I've read into is just reports and more assumptions than anything else. But I think if that actually happens, I think it'll be a great thing for football, because like I said, it'll maintain that high level of competition within teams. So because teams aren't going to be forced to sell any players, and you still might see some bigger transfer fees going out for players in that 50 to maybe like 100 mil range. But I don't think you're going to be seeing many players go above maybe like 80, 90 million and above. I don't think many players are going to be going for that fee, because I mean, like I said, all these teams are going to be definitely trying to make up for the lost revenue over this time period for sure.
Yeah. I mean, look, I got to put it short. And my way of looking at it is financial fair play is in place so that you as a club are not overspending to overachieve. And when you fall short, you know, you're looking at an internal collapse. So I have a really strict view of financial fair play. And my strict view is, you know, I don't think they should be any more lenient than they already are, because realistically, a lot of clubs do not operate within financial fair play, and for one reason or another, avoid punishment pretty frequently. And, you know, that's obviously, you know, I wouldn't be citing that. That's just kind of what I see at this point. So I couldn't give you a real source on that. But, you know, I really think that if you're operating outside of the realms of financial fair play and something happens where you can't take on, and I'm putting air quotes right now, an assumed revenue. So, you know, I look to what happened with Milan. I love Milan. I have no quarrel saying that. I'm a Romanisti. I love Roma, but Milan are a wonderful club with wonderful history. I never wish anything bad upon them. However, the way they were being ran, you know, there were a lot of assumed dollars saying we're gonna spend big and hopefully we get to the UCL and we get to where we need to be. And you know, they were out of a European spot, albeit it was Europa League, but you know, that's not how you should be operating under financial fair play. And if this pandemic situation exposes some clubs that are operating this way, and you know, you ask the question of, well, you know, what were you doing here? And they said, well, we were assuming income over here. You know, to an extent, I'm sure that there are certain situations. I would look to Atalanta in the UCL, assuming that they're going to get, you know, their next round of money, and they don't. I know they're not the biggest club. That's really the only instance that comes to mind where I would say, you know, you guys should really, you know, you should be considered as some kind of exemption, or there should be some workings for you. But for clubs that weren't already guaranteed certain incomes, and you know, for clubs that were spending big to say, you know, we'll qualify for this competition or we'll finish in this league spot without the financial backings that they should have had, I don't think any exceptions should be made that way. I think it should be firm at that capacity. So you know, that's really my take on the situation. You know, and another point real quick to make on the subject of transfers is, I actually fellow Romanisti on Twitter, Fat Totti, which, you know, all credit for the handle. I think that's hilarious. He actually pointed, I quoted a Football Italia tweet, and, you know, in case you want to give him a follow or anything along those lines, it's, at @fat_Totti. And he said, swap deals, loans, and freeze are the only deals I can see most clubs taking after this situation. Transfer values will be slashed in half, basically, so teams won't want to sell as the loss on a player will be greater than usual. Will be a weird mercato, whatever, whenever it happens. So, you know, obviously that's an opinion over there, and I coincide with that opinion, and I know there's going to be a lot going on in the way of swaps and loans and et cetera. But I really think that this can act as an unintentional reset to the transfer shock that we've been seeing recently, where you see players going for 200, 250 million euros. You know, you can see this as more of a return to the roots where, you know, let's say you're a club operating within financial fair play that's still holding a strict level, and you can't really make an exorbitant move. Well, you might give another look at maybe a less expensive player or a player that you could swap or take in on loan, give an opportunity elsewhere. I think this will be a very nice facelift to football, if you will.
Yeah, I think to your point, yeah, the president of Juve, Agnelli, also mentioned a lot about his thoughts about the next transfer market. And he did mention that he did think that there was going to be a lot more swaps of players than ever before, just for kind of that reason, because teams aren't going to want to take on and lose money on so many players. So they're going to try to kind of plug the gaps and fill the holes in the rosters, swapping players for players, which I think is definitely going to happen. I 100% agree with that. It's just kind of what I mentioned before. I don't think you're going to be seeing many players moving above that like 60, 70 mil mark. I don't think there's going to be many transfers, if any at all, around that dollar figure. But I think definitely for sure you're going to be seeing a lot of, like you mentioned, like free contracts, free agents signed for different players. That those are going to be even higher market names than they usually were, because they're going to come with with no risk of paying any transfer fees. But then, yeah, definitely swap deals are going to be happening a lot more often for sure.
Yeah, and I think that's a good lead off to, you know, something that I'm a little bitter about, the Newcastle takeover that's pending. It's not, you know, it's not enough that it seems that Roma is destined to go from, you know, from one American ownership to the next at this point, with the Friedrich Group looking at taking over, or the Friedrich Group looking at taking over. But now it looks as if, you know, there's a genuine interest from what would be the richest owner in football, at least in the Premier League, I would argue, probably close to in the rest of the world, with Newcastle looking at being taken over, you know, by a group here, and being given exorbitant funds for spending in the upcoming transfer window. And you gotta say, it might not ever work out this well for Newcastle if this transfer, or I'm sorry, rather this shift of ownership gets handled prior to the window opening and everything gets moved over. Well, I mean, you're going to be walking into a discount store with all these clubs looking to make ends meet, and you might be able to get some cutthroat deals that you, quite frankly, weren't able to pull off or would have never had the opportunity to before.
Yeah, so for anybody that hasn't been kind of keeping up with it, the Newcastle is going to get bought out. I read that was already approved by the former owner. So Mike Ashley, who's the current owner of Newcastle, has already agreed to sell the club. It is currently pending approval by the Premier League. So as long as there's no hiccups and the Prem doesn't obviously reject it, that's the only way that deal is going to fall through. But it looks very likely it's going to be finished up within the next few weeks. I think the final figure is around 350 mil for the club. But yeah, to Tim's point, the new owner group, which is led by his name is Sheikh Khalid bin Zayed, And he is, let's just say that he would put the money that Man City have, the Sheikh Mansour, who's the owner of Man City, he puts his money to shame. I'll leave it at that. So there was a really cool post that actually Tim kind of sent me a couple days ago while we were kind of like talking about topics. And he kind of put all that stuff in like a little post Football World's on Instagram posted. So Sheikh Mansour, his net worth is about $23 billion. So obviously that's a lot of money. That's very much a ton of money. The new ownership, Sheikh Khalid, who would be the new owner of Newcastle, he is valued at over $260 billion. So like I said, to my point before, he puts Man City's money to shame. But yeah, of course, kind of to what we talked about before, obviously Newcastle aren't going to be able to be just blowing out like 500 million euro in a transfer market and spend it all on players. But to your point, this would definitely be a great advantage for them, just because they're going to get these cut rate deals and they're going to be able to sign bigger name players for smaller fees than they would definitely move for, so they could still operate within financial fair play. Obviously, this move is also going to enable them to get massive partnerships. I'm sure Etihad and all those other kind of like Middle Eastern sponsors that Man City have, I think they're a good portion of them are also going to go over to Newcastle, especially United Arab Emirates, because the Sheikh Khalid guy that I mentioned before, he actually owns United Arab Emirates. So you're definitely going to be seeing a lot of United Arab Emirates sponsors popping up at Newcastle in the next future, which is obviously going to pump more money into the club that way and give them a larger revenue, which is obviously going to in turn give them more spending ability in the transfer market and get more stars into that name. Obviously, the club right now with this takeover is linked to literally everybody you name. Dries Mertens is a guy that was linked to the club. I read reports that Gareth Bale is a high profile target that they're trying to sign. So I mean, any name that you could possibly name under sun in terms of bigger names players, I've seen linked to Newcastle. I've read Neymar links. I've read Mbappe links, which are absolutely absurd. But you can't really kind of take them out of the realm of possibility, because now with this newfound money and this new sponsorship money that's going to come into Newcastle, these moves can become reality. Will they become reality? No, I don't think Mbappe and Neymar are going to go to Newcastle. But I think that those transfers and those caliber players, I think in a year or two, are going to be shifting the balance towards the Premier League and towards Newcastle, kind of in the same way that Man City did at the beginning, when Man City brought in a couple big players like the Touré brothers, and you had Carlos Tevez. And then it slowly started shifting to buying more and more players as the team was getting better and better. And I think that's what you're going to see with this Newcastle situation. I think you're going to see a couple bigger names kind of go to Newcastle now, not a full roster, but maybe like five or six profile names that we know in the world of football. And then in a couple of years, you're going to be seeing those bigger transfer fees and those really true superstars starting to move there if the team continues to trend and build that direction.
All right. Well, look, I'm gonna put it this way. I think there's never been a club who was under the impression that they were the size of a 260 billion, owner than Newcastle. They have a very high expectation of their club and of their players, but they really love their football. So I'm actually really happy this happened to their club. I wouldn't even, I am joking about, being upset about it. And I tweeted that I wasn't upset with them. I was upset about the situation that it hadn't happened to Roma. I'm going to throw a number at you. 108. What do you think 108 is? To Newcastle specifically.
For Newcastle specifically?
Yes.
How many years they've been in the Premier League?
Nope.
Ooh, you got me stumped. That was my first guess and my only guess.
Okay, well, I won't drag this out. Per the Daily Mirror, 108 is the number of pubs within a half mile of the stadium to Newcastle, and they are ahead by a country mile to pretty much everybody else. I think the next ones are 32 pubs. And I know it sounds like a silly number to bring up, but Couldn't it have happened to, you know, arguably one of the bigger fan bases? You know, I just think it's a place that like lives for eats, sleeps and breathes, you know, football stuff. I like that it happened to them. To your point, as far as signings goes, you know, I think one of the big ones that they've been linked with so far, and one of the most important pieces or to that puzzle, is going to be the fact that they're looking at bringing back Rafa Benitez. And if you're looking for a guy who will, you know, you have all the money in the world to spend, but you still have to spend it smart. And if you're looking at a guy who you can go, what do you need exactly? He will give you exactly what you need. He will give you exactly what he wants to do with these players, and he will give you exactly how it'll work out. He, you know, was looked at as kind of a savior in recent times for the club. He came in and gave them hope in a lot of ways that they didn't have before. So big portion of their fan base is looking to bring him back. I know that they're being linked with other big name coaches, but I think the allure of working under an ownership that has a ton of funds is kind of misleading, because you still have to be practical. And I think he's the guy to be practical. So regardless of who they bring in, whether it's Jadon Sancho, whether, you know, it's Leroy Sané, whether, you know, it's João Félix, whoever, you know, regardless of who they bring in, I think having a calm, cool head at the helm is what's going to be important. And I think he would be that guy of all the available managers right now. I think he would be that guy.
It's funny that you mention like Rafa Benitez being linked to the job, because the latest rumors that I saw was that Newcastle would definitely like to bring in, of all names, Max Allegri to the club, and bring Arturo Vidal as like one of the focal pieces for the midfield along with him, which I think would be a really funny way, considering how Vidal and obviously Allegri made a lot of their careers and really good memories in the black and white shirts of Juve, and then that they would kind of like rekindle it and be together again in the black and white shirts of Newcastle instead for the second tour. So I thought that was just like a funny little rumor that I read about Max Allegri joining Newcastle and Vidal being one of his signings, which obviously would be pretty funny to see them in a black and white shirt of Newcastle combined. So that kind of goes in hand in hand to the point that I made before, of that they're being linked with any big name player that could potentially move. And that kind of goes along also with big name managers. So we talked about obviously Benitez and Allegri. So I think they're in that same boat. But since we've talked about transfers, I think I want to kind of bring it back to Serie A for a little bit. And let's talk about some Serie A transfer rumors. Obviously, with football being kind of on pause, transfer rumors are probably like the most favorite thing for any newspaper right now, for any publication, for any place you look, they're doing transfer rumors. And we here at Top Ends are just like everybody else. No, I'm kidding. But we do like to do some stuff just like everybody else. So we are going to do just a little bit. We throw in a smidge of everybody else, and it's like 98% complete shenanigans here. So we're going to do some transfer rumors. Obviously, we're going to start with Serie A, and then what I like to do, we're going to play a little game between Roma and Juve, and some stuff that we tweeted out earlier today in some response. So we're going to get into some fan stuff, which is cool that we're going to do today. But let's go back to the transfer rumors. Let's start off with a couple of Napoli players. So you have Dries Mertens linked to a host of different clubs. Most notably, I saw last was the Premier League. I believe Chelsea was one of the bigger names that he was linked with. And Arkadiusz Milik, the Polish striker, now being recently linked with Juve. So what are your thoughts about Mertens potentially going to a Chelsea club, for example, or the EPL, or Milik, for example, going to Juve, for example, in his recent link?
All right. So if I had to throw a couple of ratings out here, Dries Mertens to Chelsea, in a practicality standpoint, if it's on a free, I'd give that a 5 out of 5. I think you have Tammy Abraham has the backing of Frank Lampard, and he has you know, the Chelsea fan base on his side right now. He's a homegrown boy, and they love him over there. So practicality wise, I think it's a 5 out of 5, because, you know, Tammy Abraham could be, you know, your starter, or, you know, he can take the bulk of the games. And Dries Mertens, you know, although he is, nothing to scoff at in the fact that he's, if he hasn't already eclipsed the record for Napoli's all-time leading goal scorer, that, you know, he could give some great competition and teach Tammy a thing or two about, you know, playing in the center forward spot, albeit very different players, very different styles. But that is kind of the eye opening that would give it a 5 out of 5 in practicality. Now, as far as, realistically, again, if it's on a free, I see no reason why he wouldn't go to Chelsea. I'm sure Chelsea is more than willing to give him a good wage deal. Chelsea is notorious, though, for not really giving long-term contracts for players over the age of 30. So, you know, I would be curious to see how long they would give him a deal for. That might be a stumbling block. You know, but aside from that, financially, it would make sense if it was a free as well. So, you know, assuming free again, or even assuming a nominal fee, on a financial standpoint, I'd give that deal probably a 4 out of 5, assuming they could work past the contract details. Now, when you look at Milik, Milik for me is one of the most criminally underrated forwards, in Europe right now. He's suffered his fair share of injuries. He has, really struggled, greatly with that. However, he always seems to bounce back, and that is a really redeeming characteristic. He's hardworking, at least from what I've seen, and, you know, he does a good job. So as far as transfer making sense, out of five, I would give it a 3 out of 5, and hear me out as to why a 3 out of 5. It's not because of him. It's because of the situation externally. Right now, they have several forwards on the books. They would have to move Higuain, which would not be an easy task right now. You got to assume Ronaldo is going to be there for another season or two. Dybala is the present and future of that club. He loves that club. He's not going anywhere. But at the same note, the reason I'm giving it a 3 out of 5, again, it's not because of, Milik. Milik is young. He's hungry. He's a great forward. It's realistically, it's just if they can move other players, and that is the hardest part of a transfer, is making the room for that player if it's not already there. So before I hand it over to you on those notes, I guess I should also give the financial side of it. Milik, I don't know if the club kind of seems to be in a weird transition period right now in Napoli. We were talking about how Gattuso's team settle. They really didn't get a chance to settle, which is why I say they're a weird transition. It's not their fault. There's an international pandemic going on. Right now, I think financially speaking, if Napoli doesn't ask the world of it, or if Juve can offer a sweet swap deal their way, I would give that a 4 out of 5 financially making sense, because I really don't think he's going to be asking for, Neymar or Mbappe status wages on that note.
Right. Cool. Makes sense. Well, I'm going to give obviously my side of it as well. I'm pretty much going to agree with you almost wholeheartedly on the Mertens situation. I think he's obviously, his contract's winding down. I think the fee, if he goes for any kind of fee, if not a free, it will be sub 10 mil. So I think whatever club is going to be getting him is going to be getting a hell of a player for a hell of a bargain, essentially. I think Mertens can still ball at the top level. Maybe not as consistently as playing world-class week in, week out, but he will definitely play. He definitely is a hard worker, and he's done a hell of a job playing as a false nine, essentially, for Napoli for a very long time. I believe he does have the current record for most goals in the shirt. So he's definitely a Napoli legend and will be remembered at that club for a long time. But I think at Chelsea, he would make sense. Even kind of playing like off Tammy Abraham in like a 2-striker setup, I could definitely see him as like a secondary striker, kind of how like Dybala plays off Ronaldo at Juve. I could see him doing that same kind of thing with Tammy Abraham being like the target man, focal point of the offense. And then you have kind of Mertens playing off him. I think that'd be a really cool dynamic to watch, especially for Chelsea next year. So out of probabilities, I think kind of what you mentioned in terms of the fee, I think, and even the club making sense for Chelsea, I think it's a 5 out of 5 for both of me, for both those things for me. In terms of Milik, he's definitely an interesting striker. The early kind of feedback that I've gotten from Juve fans so far is it's either you think he's a good player, or you think he's absolute trash. There's no like middle ground right now with Juventini when it comes to that signing. And my thoughts, I would probably give this a transfer, kind of what you said, like a 3 or 4 out of 5 on both categories. I think the money that they're going to require to get Milik to the club isn't going to be crazy. I think it'll be in that 30 mil range if those transfer fees are accurate to what their values are. So I think a 30 mil transfer from him wouldn't be breaking the bank at the club at all. Also, I think he'd be a direct replacement for Higuain, just because I do think that his time at the club is nearing its end. I think that kind of showed last year when the club really tried to move him to Chelsea and then to Milan and then to Chelsea. So it kind of strained some relationships. So obviously Higuain's also getting up there in age. He's, I think, 33 at this point. So replacing him with a 26-year-old, I think would be obviously a wise move. The team needs to get younger. Milik did have 20 goals last year. So he did have a 20 goal campaign last year, and in 14 starts for the club had 9 goals this year. So he's definitely been productive since his ACL injuries, which is a good thing. So scoring 35 goals in 60 or 55, 60 matches is a great way to come back. So I think that's awesome. I think he'd definitely be productive. And I think you'd see an uptick in statistics for him, playing off of Ronaldo and Dybala and the rest of that Juve team. So I think it's a move that I would like to happen. I think a lot of people are going to complain that it's not that 100 million euro striker like a Harry Kane or whatever. But I think he would definitely get the job done. I think he'd be beneficial at Juve. So in terms of other kind of transfer moves, we did see a little bit of rumors about Moise Keane potentially returning from his time at Everton, which has obviously not been great. 22 matches, only 1 goal. And him coming back and apparently playing for Merida, for Inter, if you don't know what that means. So what are your thoughts about that move and him kind of coming back to Italy playing for that club?
So if, again, I'm going out of 5 on that, on a make sense standpoint, if you will, out of 5, I would give it a 2. For Inter specifically, I would give it a 2. Because A, I know they're looking at, moving on, Lautaro Martinez. I know they have, Rom up front, big Rom up front. And they have, I think Esposito I feel like that's his name, he's a young man. He's very good. Conte likes him. I really don't see him getting in any better of a situation besides being back home in Italy, for that. I think it's easy to forget, young players don't always settle very quickly. Everybody's used to like a 20, 21-year-old going into a club and settling in straight away and bagging goals. He's learning a different side of the game in England. And on a practicality standpoint, I think it would only hurt his career to bow out of Everton at this point. Carlo Ancelotti has been giving him more game time than Duncan Ferguson was. I think he has a lot to learn under Carlo, and Carlo's always been a great coach, in my opinion. He's a great man manager. So on a practicality wise, 2 out of 5 for me. I don't think it makes a lot of sense. Financially speaking, I would probably even go 1 out of 5. For a financial standpoint, consider this. Everton, what did they pay? In the region of 30, 40 mil for him, somewhere along those lines, depending on incentives. So you'd assume they would at least like to recoup most, if not all, of that transfer fee. You're looking at Inter, who just spent big on Rome, and, they have a couple other transfers pending. I believe Icardi's also on his way back. I don't think he's going to be permanently locked in at PSG. So, you consider all these factors. Financially speaking, I got to give it a 1 out of 5. It's not going to make sense for anybody financially except for Everton if they could break even. You got to assume Moise's not going to make any more than he already is on that. If I had to give an alternative, I would say that for one reason or another, if he ended up at Roma, I think he would be endeared to the Roma fans. I think the Roma fans would love to see him. He's already best buddies with Nicolo, and I think he would be a good fit over there. But as far as going to Inter, it's just a bad move all around for everybody involved. I think if he, you know, digs his studs into the ground and doubles down on what he's got going on right now, he'd be in a really good way.
Cool. Well, I'm going to keep it very short and sweet and to the point. I'm 100% agreeing with you. I have nothing different that I would add than what you wanted to add. What I do want to do is you and me earlier today both posted on our Twitter accounts about bringing in your ideal, let's say, four players into the club in the next window. And we obviously got a lot of hits. So we both got a lot of comments and different players mentioned from all across the board. I did mention to in mind to keep it realistic. So do you want to share? Let's do this little fan section. Let's share some top comments or some ones that you kind of thought were in terms of making the most sense for the club in your next window. Do you have some pulled up or do you want me to go?
I have some, I have several pulled up. So, I'm going to go. And before I go, I have to say that I know we just called it a fan section, but I'm as big a fan of anybody that that gives us a follow and takes time to listen to what we have to ramble on about than yeah. they are of the pod. And I think, yeah, you probably agree on that. So, that being thrown out there. Now, of course, the first person to respond is the ever diligent, the distant Loopy. Nothing but love for my man over across the pond. He always cracks me up because, every response kind of comes off like it's a press conference. Like it's just very well written back. Whereas I feel like I just kind of blurt out words. And so I really appreciate that he takes time on that. He did say, it was a tough question on his opinion. But he kind of went on the, he went on what I actually really agree with on the defensive side, which is if our sporting director can maybe put together, and he actually said, putting our scouting network to good use and uncover, some good defenders, somewhere along those lines, that would be a really good find. He also actually threw out there that using some experience and maybe Willian or Vertonghen, who I believe are both out of contract, if I'm correct here, or soon to be.
Yes, they should both be on a free, yep.
Yeah, so, we kind of agreed on, the fact that there's a lot of youth already in the Roma side and that, putting some experience behind that would be a really nice cherry on top and give a lot of the guys a good look. But, and again, if anybody wants to give them a follow, it's actually just at Distant Loopy, and that's L-U-P-I. So the next one actually kind of, Adam Fish went the other way. Cool guy. I actually threw a couple Wolfsburg players out at me. So Weghorst, if, you want to give it one guess to Weghorst's height.
Six.
Wait, really? You just nailed it on the first try.
Because I'm a tall person, so I can appreciate and notice somebody who's also very tall. It's an ability we tall people have. We just know how tall somebody else is. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're tall.
I'm 5'9", in case anybody was interested. I'm short. Whether it's somebody he mentioned, Mbabu.
Built like Shaqiri.
All right. Nobody needs to know that. But anyway, Mbabu was also a mention on his tweet.
Mbabu's a shout. I like Mbabu. Especially if you play FIFA, you know about Mbabu.
So I actually asked him, I said, hey, why him specifically? He goes, he's 25, fast, big for a right back, plays all over the back, okay ball skills, and runs for days. And I was like, that's all I need out of a defender. So I couldn't agree more with him on that. Another couple shout outs as well. If you think I cook a lot, Boston Jalarossi, great chef, great football fan as well. Must be a pit master at this point. All I see this guy using his smoker and making delicious meals. So he did actually mention that the current midfield, he's happy with it. He said, they got to grow together, so I don't want to see anything moving around there. He said, he would look to keep Smalling and, one of either Mkhitaryan or Under, bring in either Steven El-Sharawi or Munir. Which are pretty interesting shouts. I mean, Steven El-Sharawi has definitely been missed. I think everybody loved him, didn't want to see him go. You know, if I had to pick between Mickey and Under, I'd probably go with Under to keep. Mickey just seems a little, you know, a little like he might be on his last legs coming up, a little hurt. But Stephen Alcharawe is definitely a good shout. And actually, Fat Thoughty, again, just I chuckle every time I hear the at, as well as Sonny Winters, and that's actually at SONNOOSW. The two of them actually referenced Zappacosta. And it was really funny because I was actually also in the back of my mind, I went, you know, Zappacosta is probably a good shout to just keep at right back. And I said, you know, it's kind of funny. We all, you know, we all kind of like fond of him, even though he really didn't play that much. And, you know, he actually, Sonny actually responded and he said, it's actually for lack of a good right back, laughing. And Fat Thoughty also said, literally Zappacosta, Perez, Santon, or Buya are our options. Not really exciting. You know, I got to agree with them. As far as right back goes, a genuine right back, I don't mean a makeshift Florenzi, who, again, I love him until the death of me. But, you know, a genuine right back, I would prefer to see Zappacosta being brought back on. I think his stay was a little short-lived due to the fact that he has, you know, has had some serious injuries going on there. And self-exiled Romanista also responded with several players. But out of the lot, I would actually have to pick Biragi and Pazela, and I think those are two great shouts as well. I think all around, everybody that I follow can collectively agree Roma needs an overhaul on our defense to be more consistent, because our forwards are midfield, young, exciting. I enjoy them. However, it's really more of a case of a lack of confidence coming out of the back, and if we could lock that down, it'll just give the forwards even more confidence moving forward. So I will hand it over to you, but before you get all excited, I just want to point out that comparing Juve's transfer market scenario to Roma's transfer market scenario and calling it a fun game is like you pulling onto the track with a Ferrari and me pulling up with a beat up old Fiat and saying that we're going to have a race. You're about to have exceptionally more fun. I'm going to bow out of this one and I'll let you take the lead from here.
All right. Yeah, that is a very good analogy, because it is very true. So I approached my my question a little bit different. I asked my followers to list four realistic names that you could see coming to Juve in the next transfer window. There was a lot of overlap in terms of the positions. So you're going to see a lot of fullbacks, specifically two or three names in terms of fullbacks. Majority of the players are midfielders with a couple forwards. I think the forward position is definitely going to be something that's going to be needed to be upgraded at Juventus, just because with Higuain most likely going out, you do have a 35-year-old Ronaldo in the attack, and then that's really it. I mean, Dybala is obviously there, and he's going to be at the club for hopefully a long time, but the club does need to figure out what to do with that striker position and that forward position. So a lot of forwards and a lot of the youth, which is kind of like the big thing that I've been preaching about with Juve's hopeful next transfer windows, is to bring in young players. Juve's average age is the oldest in Serie A, and it's been, I think, the oldest in the Champions League for a couple of years now. I think they're close to like, it's like a 29.8 average is the average age of a player on the squad at Juve. And that shows you that the team desperately needs some youth. So in terms of some feedback that I got from some followers of mine, you have one of my, I'm going to start it off with one of my Polish homies, Mark Ravich 17 is the handle, and he went straight up attack. And this is probably my favorite one. So I'm going to kick it off with my favorite one. And it was Gabriel Jesus, Arkadiusz Milik, Sandro Tonali, and Ferran Torres from Valencia. And I was like, yes, this, if Juve did those four moves, I don't care what they do anywhere else in terms of moves for the summer. I would be all for it, because you have an amazing kind of future star in terms of Gabriel Jesus, who's already kind of established himself with City. And I think he can kind of do a little bit of everything. He can play that nine role, but he's also just electric, just has pace. He's strong on the ball, and he has that Samba flair, and I absolutely love that. You have a replacement for Higuain and Milik, who can be that new kind of like target man, nine kind of figure. You have obviously Sandro Tonali, who is one of the bigger prospects that not just in Italy, but in all of football, and especially a midfielder that plays kind of like a Gattuso, Pirlo combo. And obviously what club in Italy wouldn't want that guy? And a name that I'm really high on is Ferran Torres. He's a kind of like a winger forward out of Valencia. The kid just balls. He's just dynamic. He's just very direct. Loves to dribble, loves to shoot. And I think this one kind of hit the nail on the head. I think it's a lot of young players, a lot of kind of invigoration that the club desperately needs. That was probably my favorite one that I've seen. Somebody else mentioned a couple other positions. Obviously, Tonali is a name that I saw almost in pretty much almost everybody's list. So that name kind of transfers list to list. One of the other homies, Bianconero, 93, gave me a list of Tonali, Telles, Milik, and Ceballos, Danny Ceballos, who plays for Arsenal. And he wrote a cool comment. He was like, the midfield needs to be reinforced with young, talented blood. Milik would be very good up top with support. And Telles would add more depth to the fullback position, which we desperately need. And I was like, this hits the nail pretty much on the head. I think, obviously, the fullback position is definitely something that's needed at Juventus, especially right back, more specifically than left back. Left back obviously becomes a hole if Sandro is sold. But he kind of hit the nail on the head. The midfield needs to be reinforced with young, talented player. I think Danny Ceballos is fits that mold of a creative young player, knows how to dribble, has agility, and can kind of dictate the tempo in the middle of that pitch. Obviously, Tonali, another name that's kind of crossed over into the next kind of list, which is awesome. Obviously, Milik up top, same kind of comments as before, that Higuain replacement, that number nine, that kind of target guy, if the club wants to use that way. Alex Telles is definitely a left back that I'm very high on. I think he's an awesome fullback. I think he's one of the best players at his position in the world. I think he also, like Alexandre did before he came to Juventus, he also plays for Porto, which is awesome. So he kind of brings over that like Portuguese style of play into the Serie A. He's very attack-minded, loves to get forward with the ball, and I think that's something that a lot of people have kind of given stick to Sandro over the last like year or two, that his first 2 year seasons at the club, he was just dynamic going forward, and he's kind of averaged out over the last 2 years. So I think having another fresh face that's just dynamic, that's just very forward pushing, would be an awesome move for the club. Another one of my friends, Rami, gave a pretty solid list. It was Telles, Tonali. Like I said, those guys are gonna overlap in a lot of lists, but he mentioned two different names, and one here's my thought on both of these names. One is Hassem Ouar, who plays for Lyon, and I absolutely love this kid. I think he balls. 22 years old. He's just like a dynamic box to box creator. I love OR. I'm very high on the kid. Just like a box to box creative midfielder. The kid just runs all over the place. He's knows how to dribble, knows how to attack players, can pick out and dish out a great pass. So I'm very high on OR. I would absolutely love him at Juve. And then another name that he mentioned is Icardi. And I'm not a huge fan of Mauro Icardi. A couple reasons. One, he's merda sloppy second. So obviously, I don't think that any Inter players should be at Juve. I don't think we need any of their players to be successful. So that's just one thought I have on him. Two is obviously the fee form is going to be absolutely tremendous. PSG have a 70 mil buyout on him. And then that increases by an additional 15 mil if PSG use that buyout and sell him to a Serie A club. So effectively, Juve would have to pay over 85 million euros to bring in Icardi, plus the high wages, plus all the off-field issues with Wanda and all those other things. I just don't think it's a match. I would like Juve, and I've told this to a bunch of my other followers on Twitter. I feel like Juve should focus more on getting young, creative, agile, and athletic forwards, because I think that's the way that the game is moving. I think what you're seeing in terms of world football is less number nines and traditional poachers being used, and a lot more players with skill, with pace, being used as that focal point in the attack. Players like Lacazette, Timo Werner's another name like that, Gabi Jesus. Those are the kind of forwards that I kind of think when I think of today's modern forward. I think that poachers are kind of being phased out a little bit. Players like Falcao or players alongside that mold aren't going to be used as much. So Icardi is not really a name that I really like. I think that Juve need more pace and more agility and more kind of flair and that kind of ability that you can kind of create a goal out of nothing. And I feel like that's the way that Juve should go with their attack. So those are obviously just a couple of mine. One really cool one that I saw was one of my homies. I can't really say his name because he has a bad word in it. Obviously, we're PG here. But his at is Gomu Gomu No John. And he wrote out Milik, Paul Pogba, which is obviously a huge controversial thing with Juventini. Either half of them want Paul Pogba back or half don't want Paul Pogba back. So it's very controversial. Milik, obviously, Emerson, the Italian left back who currently plays for Chelsea. And he mentioned a name that I really like, and that's Kai Havertz from Leverkusen. I love Kai. I haven't seen really too many links of him to Juve, but he'd definitely be an awesome player that I would love to watch play at Juventus, being that central kind of attacking midfielder role. He's absolutely phenomenal player, and I think he'd be one to kind of build a club around. I think he's, what, 22, 23? So I think that'd just be an awesome move. So that was just like a little bit more of a creative one. That's really all the ones that I have out of mind. Do you have any other comments to add from your Twitter post?
No, I just think it's funny that you mentioned several excellent top shelf players and said, yeah, I mean, if we could sign them, I would be kind of satisfied. Meanwhile, I'm sitting here trying to decide if I should keep Chris Smalling or Mkhitaryan. So, you know, it's fine. It is what it is. I'm not upset. I sound upset, but it's fine. So on that note, before I get more upset, let's go to fun topics.
Fun topics. So what do we got for fun topics today, Tim?
So we got two fun topics. We have your all-time world XI 4-3-3 formation and favorite or actually football shows or books that you have enjoyed. So let's start out with the world XI.
No, actually, let's end it there because I feel like that's going to be longer than the shows.
Okay, fine. We had an idea, but it's fine.
We're going to dive deep into those 11s. I think those kind of take out in a minute or two.
All right, this is where the gloves come. We'll hold off. We'll get this warm up in real quick. So why don't you go ahead? I know you were excited about a couple shows you were watching. So why don't you go first?
Sure. So just like any other Juventini, I have rewatched, I think twice in the last few weeks, the Juventus documentary on Netflix. Great, obviously, seeing the kind of behind the scenes of Juve from a couple of seasons ago. And that was pre-Cristiano Ronaldo. If you haven't watched, it's on Netflix. Great docuseries. Loved it. Now, the one that's probably been my favorite one over the last like 5 weeks to watch has definitely been the Brazil 2019 Copa America behind the scenes documentary, which was absolutely awesome. Kind of gave you obviously a behind the scenes kind of look into the club and or the national team and how they kind of prepared and got ready for the tournament, which they obviously ended up winning. But it was just amazing, like just seeing the behind the scenes and how the players trained, and they had interviews, and you had a lot of issues in that training camp because if people didn't know, Neymar obviously got hurt in one of the warm-ups prior to the tournament, so he was out of the tournament. Richarlison actually got the mumps and had to be quarantined while he was at with the team and actually ended up playing later on in that tournament, which is just absolutely crazy. But it gave you like really a passionate look of how not only the national team coaches his team, but also how the players respond and just how connected they are and how tight-knit they are as a group. So that's definitely been an awesome docuseries to watch. I 100% recommend it. In terms of books, I have finished the Pavel Nedved biography, which is an awesome read. I'm currently reading The History of Juve by Adam Digby. Shout out to Adam Digby. He wrote a great book. I'm actually reading it in Polish, so whoever translated for him, GG's, great job to you. You did an awesome job. Great read for me so far. I'm almost done with it. So that's been what I've been kind of like watching and reading over the last few weeks. Do you have anything that you've been kind of like keeping an eye on?
Yeah, so I've actually, I watched season 2 of Sunderland Till I Die. So that was probably one of the most depressing cinematic experiences I've seen recently. And I just watched Snowpiercer. So, you know, let me give that some perspective. Anybody who is a fan of movies, you know, give me a shout because I love talking about them. But anyway, Sunderland Till I Die, you know, same kind of format, just a hard knocks behind the scenes. I do wish that they, you know, they spoke more to the players. You know, it was definitely an insightful view of, you know, how clubs are ran financially, you know, what they plan to do, how they consider the year. So that was really exciting to look forward, you know, to go through. I also watched, there's a Liverpool Arsenal documentary that's on Netflix, and I watched that one for the first time. If anybody's interested, just give me a shout and I'll figure out what the name of it was, but that was pretty interesting as well. It was cool to see, you know, all the Arsenal players come back and discuss how they were feeling about that season and, you know, and how everything was put together. So, I had a good time watching that one. And actually, as far as reading goes, not a football book, a tennis book. I have actually picked up Andre Agassi's Open. And Andre Agassi, Open is definitely a fitting title to the book. It is a window into this man's personal life. And, I haven't been really able to put the book down. It's been exceptional. It's a good read. He's, he really lets you inside of his mind, not only as a player, but as somebody who, hadn't had the easiest childhood and had a bit of a sport crazy dad, which I'm sure a lot of people can relate to. If you get a chance to, funny story, actually, I picked it up for, used for $17 by accident because I went to if you do like reading, you're probably aware of online book thrift stores. So I went online and the book was $3.50 online. And actually the expedited shipping was whatever the difference is to $17. And there was a free shipping option. And of course, I looked at the expedited shipping to go, oh, cool. So if I wanted to get it here in 2 days, I would pay an exorbitant amount of money compared to how much the book is. And of course, I forgot to change it back, confirm the order. Before I could do anything, everything was already sent out. And so I paid $17 for a used book. So you're all welcome for that short, slightly ridiculous story of how careless I can be at times. I think that'll carry us into the last one here, which is all-time world XI 11s.
All-time world 11s. Now, we did have one rule. So before anybody chooses out for this, we did take away Messi and Ronaldo from this list just because I think we wanted to see some different varieties. Because I feel like if anybody made a World 11, Messi and Ronaldo would be in 99.9% of them, unless you're crazy, because they are obviously two of the best players of all time. But we wanted to do it something different and kind of include some different attackers in our World 11s. So I'm going to let you kick it off because I have some things to say.
All right, that's fine. And before you say anything, just know that I'm a grown man and I don't care what you have to say about this. So, goalkeeper, I'm going with Manuel Neuer because even though he's been injured in recent times, it's very easy to overlook the impressive career that he's had as a goalkeeper. I will argue he will go down as one of the greats goalkeeping-wise after his retirement. Speaking of great players, right back I have Dani Alves. If not the already most trophy-laden, professional soccer player there, football player there ever was. I believe he's already had that record. At center backs, I have Puyol and Nesta. At left back, I have Maldini. And my midfield three, it consists of De Rossi, Zidane, Gerrard. At forward, I have Thierry Henry, Francesco Totti, and Luis Figo. Lining up there, obviously Henri on the left-hand side, Totti down the middle, and Luis Figo on the right. So that is my XI.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay. Do you want me to make my comments now, or do you want me to do my 11?
Wait, so you're really right now asking me, like, do I want to hear the other side of the conversation, or do I want to hear you complain about what I already chose?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. All right, cool. So let me hear your side first, and then, we'll be able to go back and forth.
You want my 11?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. All right. So in my 11, I'm going to be a little biased, and I'm going to have Gigi Buffon in goal. I'm starting from the back. At right back, I think this is the only position that we agreed on or had the same player, and that's Dani Alves at right back. So that's cool. We agreed on one out of 11. So my two center backs are going to be Maldini and Cannavaro. Cannavaro, obviously, because being the leader of that legendary Italian team, being the last defender to win the Ballon d'Or, he was just an immense defender. And also being undersized at 5'9", he definitely showed that you don't need to be 6'2" to play center back, which is amazing. Maldini, obviously, for obvious reasons, I think he's the greatest defender of all time. As a center back, I had one issue, and I'm going to dive into it right now, is I think, yes, Maldini started as a left back, but he played 85, 90% of his time at center back. So I feel like he is the GOAT center back. I think Roberto Carlos is my left back. I think just the things that that guy would do with the ball in terms of crossing and shooting was just unreal. And all the things obviously he achieved with Real Madrid and Brazil is you can't compare that. In my midfield three, I have Zinedine Zidane, Andrea Pirlo, and Lothar Matthäus. So that's my midfield three. You have kind of Pirlo as the orchestrator of that midfield. You have Matthäus, who's that more of that like box to box. And then you have Zizou, who's that attacking kind of pushing forward kind of presence. And then in my front three, I don't know if you technically call it a front three or whatever positions you want to place him in, but I have Eusebio, Johan Cruyff, and R9, so Ronaldo, as my center forward. So that is my World 11.
Okay.
So any comment?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't – you have three center forwards playing in a 4-3-3. I mean, whatever. But, you know, I do respect the
– Well, Cruyff played as a cam and as a winger, so, I mean, it works. Eusebio might be the only one that you might be. So if I moved my formation and made it a 4-3-1-2, it would fit.
Yeah, but that wasn't what the deal was. The deal was 4-3-3.
All right.
Okay, well, I'm just saying, don't – if you're not going to play the formation, then don't call the formation. That's all I'm saying.
All right, but I picked three forwards. It's a 4-3-3 forwards. So it makes sense.
Okay, sure. So you expect – Lothar Matthäus, Zidane, and Pirlo to cover pretty much everything defensive shift-wise while your three forwards are up there, because R9 isn't dropping back, Eusebio isn't dropping back, Cruyff might drop back because he just had the brain of a football god, but you know, you're leaving a lot exposed there. There's not a lot of balance in that team.
That's fine, because we're going to score 7 goals a game.
Yeah, okay. All right. All right, so, you know, I do respect also, I wanted to put Fabio Cannavaro in my side as well. I went Puyol because I had a lot of respect with, you know, for those, I mean, I don't know how into Spanish football people are, but, you know, Charles Puyol, of that whole La Masia Academy setup, he was one of the few players that came late on in that. So I believe he joined when he was 17. Everybody else had been playing together when they were 13. And he ended up corralling and becoming the leader of that dominant Barcelona side and also, you know, Spain for some time. So I had a lot of respect for him there. So that's why he kind of edged out for me. And Nesta is just a brilliant defender. And, you know, I think you're spoiled for choice when it comes to defenders with the traditional Italians. And then there was an awkward pause.
Yeah. I think we're good.
Yeah.
One of the few issues that we arise when we do virtual podcasts versus our usual, our face-to-faces, but it's all good. So. Okay. Do you want me to give any feedback on your 11?
Yeah. I mean, you were dying to give me feedback on it, so go for it.
Okay, so I have two issues and one small issue. So my small issue is, yes, Maldini may have started as a left back, but he did most of his career and most of his heavy lifting as a center back. So I can't really put him as that left back. I think you had a lot of options to put at that left back spot, maybe like a Zambrotta, who played both left back and right back, very versatile and kind of like developed the modern game. You have other players, maybe like Petit, who started out as a left back also. Roberto Carlos obviously was a big miss. So I didn't agree with Maldini as a left back, even though I think a lot of people would put him there just so they could squeeze him in and get another good two center backs. My two issues were, I'm not even with Gerrard. I think Gerrard's one of the all-time great Premier League players. I know I'm going to come off like I hate Roma, but I don't understand why you put De Rossi and Totti in an all-time 11.
Okay.
Here's my thing. Hold on. Here's my thing. Let me finish. Before you go on your rant and defend it, I want to go on my rant and attack it.
Okay.
So De Rossi and Totti, I will never say a bad thing that they're not Italian legends or legends of playing for their country. I think they're some of the best players that have played in the Serie A. But I think if you look at world football in general, especially over the years, I think there's so many players that played those positions to a higher level than they did. For example, De Rossi, you could have gone with Frank Rijkaard, with Desailly, with Beckenbauer in the midfield. You could have gone with Zizou, for example, or Platini. There were so many different options that you could have plugged into the midfield in terms of what I would consider players that were better overall than De Rossi was. So De Rossi was an amazing player, played his entire career at Roma, great center defensive mid, like I said, a Serie A legend. But I think there were so many players that have played in the midfield that could have been plugged into that spot. And I think that's my same issue with Totti. Yes, Totti is a Serie A legend. Played his entire career in Roma, and I have nothing but so much respect for the guy. But when you're telling me that Totti would go into a World 11 over the likes of R9, for example, over the likes of Cruyff, of Eusebio, just names that I've even put in. And then obviously all the other strikers that have been elsewhere, for example, like Miroslav Klose, I think is one of the all-time great strikers. You have names like Shevchenko. You could have literally, the world was at your oyster with that position. So I feel like with those two choices, there was, I think, at least like a dozen players that you could have plugged into that midfield spot that have done that role in a performance way better over a longer period of time.
All right, so here's where I disagree with you, and it's not because of the fact that they play for my favorite club. Where I disagree with you is I'll give you one straight answer, okay? All those names you listed, okay? Name one thing that they can do that these players have not, expressed the clear dominance that they can do. Talking long-range goals, vision, defending, passing, as far as De Rossi was an all-around midfielder in his prime. I'll give it to you late in his career. He kind of lost a lot of mobility. However, in his prime De Rossi, I think he was an all-around, passionate, midfielder that gave his all for his team. And, if you're looking at a defensive midfielder, with all love and respect to Pirlo, even in his prime, he was not Gattuso was the grit of that midfield, and that he played with very frequently.
I was a defensive midfielder.
What was that?
I said, yeah, I agree with you. It wasn't Pirlo's job to be a defensive midfielder. He was an orchestrator of the attack. He was the vision and the passing. That was his role.
Yeah, but at the same light, De Rossi could defend, and at the same time, he had the vision to kick off. Who knows how many, even in his 30s, I think he was, in a midfield of young up-and-comers, I think he was clearly, in a way, one of the better players when he was on the pitch for Roma's midfield. He was the metronome. He was the tough tackler. Goals left his game, I'll admit it, later on in the career. But there's nothing that, any player that you name could do that these players couldn't do. I will give you that, De Rossi, I mean, I still think he had approximately an 18-year career with Roma at a senior level, and Totti, even longer at that. So, I have to acknowledge that, yeah, towards the end, maybe they weren't playing on the highest level, but, these two guys were the reason that Roma wasn't, a mid-table club. Throughout their career, they really made the difference for their club. And I think that's something you can attribute to getting into an all-time 11 team. And also, I put Gerrard in that boat as well, where, if you look at Gerrard's national career, even his club career, it wasn't laden with trophies. It was that his club only got as far as it did because he was there. And I think that's the mark of a true legend that makes it into an all-time XI.
Right, but I feel like your statistics and the accolades that you receive also play into that. I think players why do you think Dani Alves is regarded as one of the best right backs of all time? He's because he's won more than anybody else. So I feel like you also, just to be in a World 11, I feel you have to have not just because you held up your team from being a mid-table team. I feel like you also need to show that you propelled your team to the next level and that you won multiple trophies. You've exceeded at the international stage and at club level, that you've won accolades, that you've been regarded as like one of the best players at that position. And I never really saw that. I mean, like Totti, for example, you could argue that Baggio was a better attacker than Totti was, for example. Like, there's those conversations that you can have. I think with players like Cruyff, with like R9, many people aren't going to dispute those players because they've seen what they do, and those players have been they've won Ballon d'Ors, they've won accolades for being the best all time. They're regarded as some of the best players. I just never saw that from Totti or De Rossi, like being that like world beater on a consistent basis. Like you had Ronaldo winning Ballon d'Or, you had R9 winning Ballon d'Ors, you had them winning all these accolades and proving that with statistics, banging 30, 40 goals a season. I just didn't see that from Totti, for example, in being in a World 11 over the likes of those kind of players. Like Cruyff, for example, like Eusebio, those guys scored like what, like 500-600 goals in their careers. Like Totti didn't even get half of that. I think, what was he? He finished around 300 goals. So like you're comparing statistics and you're comparing accolades, and like Totti, like I said, Totti is an all-time Serie A legend, but when it comes to all-time attackers, I just don't put him in that same boat.
Yeah, I gotta disagree with you. I mean, this is something I'm gonna argue on until I'm blue in the face. But I would argue that when he was in his heyday and in his prime, actually I would say both De Rossi and Totti, when they were in their prime, they were being looked at by every club under the sun. Had they left Roma, they would have had more promising and legendary careers, absolutely. But, you know, it was their love for their club that made them stay. And I think for that additional, they have to be, you know, touted for great. So I think that's where we're going to have to agree to disagree. So I'm going to have to end it on that note because, going back to the Maldini note, I respect the note of him being a center back. However, he showed that he can play as a force at left back, and I want Thierry Henry up the pitch as frequently as he can be. So the more I free him up, the more goals that I get. So, I'm on board with him being there. I think that's as good as I'm going to talk to on this, as his ultimate, 11 that we got going on here.
That makes sense. I mean, I think we did go over by our time frame that we wanted to go by double. So yeah. way to go to us for sticking to our original game plan of doing 45 minutes an hour and a half later.
Yeah.
Let's kick it off. We're going to end it on this note. We're going to bring it back up. I might post some stuff about our World 11s and see if we have any agreements or disagreements within our Twitter fan bases. Like always, you can follow me at PL Juventino on Twitter, and I believe Tim's is at Foodie Kuji. So you can follow either one of us on Twitter anytime. You can obviously, we're gonna try to get back to as many comments as possible and try to interact with as many people as possible, considering we have nothing else to do since we're bored at home. Obviously, we're gonna try to continue cranking out content and putting out new episodes bi-weekly. That is the game plan, since we can do these virtual casts. But let us know in the comments underneath the episode if you guys enjoyed, if there's any other topics that you guys want to listen to, and anything else like that. So for me, I'm going to sign off. So Tim, do you want to say any parting words to our fandom?
Love you all. Stay safe. And, don't make any unnecessarily dangerous decisions in regards to coronavirus. Outside of that, live your life. Have fun.
Yeah, ball out. So on that note, later, guys. It was fun. Take care.
Okay.